voices. Unedited, uncut, unfiltered, unflappable. Bringing you glory to the green. Representing One Nation. Mean Green Nation. It's time for the Mean Green Nation podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. It's the Mean Green Nation podcast, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Greg Godecker. How are you doing this fine Thursday evening, Mr. Greg?
Fantastic. Ready to watch some football. Fantastic. Good football on tonight.
There's some football on tonight. There's going to be some football this weekend. It is the basement matchup. I think you kind of follow like the ESPN's bottom 10 and whatever, right?
Of course. When you're as bad as we are, you got to follow those type of things.
And then we got the CBS bottom 25, because I guess they need to measure the bottom 25. We are the game of the week there. We are taking fellow bottom 10er, bottom 25er, UDSA this weekend. Saturday, October 31st, Halloween game. The two-year anniversary of the epic Rice game when we had a double goal line stand. And and it was good things all around. We clinched bowl eligibility that day.
Absolutely.
It was a great day. 2 years later, not such a great day. Not nearly as great.
It could be a great day.
It could
be. Look, I'm of the feeling that if we're going to win one game this year, let it be Saturday.
All right, yeah, we'll get into a little bit of that. It's hashtag UTSA Hate Week. First, I want to mention a follow-up on the UNT soccer team. The good team, the best team that we have in our little collection of teams, I suppose. They won. We had preview last week. We did the podcast. We had an interview with Molly Grisham. And a correction. I think I mentioned at the end of the show that she's a left back. I misspoke. I meant to say left center back. Not that anybody knew that. But anyway. So they won. They got a couple victories. Went to Hattiesburg. They won there on Friday. It was like Friday during the day. They came home senior day or senior night, technically, and they got a win against Rice, 2-1. Good things. The conference tournament begins November 4th in Miami, in case you guys want to make a trip down there or you need an excuse to go down to Miami. Should be fun. I think it's going to be on Conference USA's All Access, a little streaming service. I'm going to try to watch it as best I can. I'm not going to make the trip down to Miami. I don't got to like that. At least not next week. And, that's basically it. I like how they said, Molly Grisham said on the interview, that's kind of where we expect to be. You know, they are back-to-back regular season champs. But in order to get to the tournament, they got to win the Conference USA tournament, so that's why it's big. Like, the real test begins now. And looking forward to that, like I said. So, hand clap, moment of acknowledgement for UNT soccer team.
Woo! Somebody's winning, and they're doing it.
Yeah. All right, now let's get to the main event. UTSA. Hashtag UTSA Hate Week. I think your cookies are ready, man. That you're baking there. we've gone over this. I posted this a couple times. Am I trying to make it a thing? Maybe a little bit. But I mean, college football and the surrounding pageantry and things is all made up, right? It's all in our heads anyway. Like, what does it really matter if a collection of dudes go win a football game against another collection of dudes? It has pretty much zero effects. Or somebody's outside riding bikes. Zero effect on our livelihoods and things unless we're like working for the program or something like that. So it's all in good fun. I think it's fun. I want to have a little sports hate. When I went to UNT and I decided to choose, the Mean Green, I looked up, who do they play? Like, they have a pretty good football team going to bowl games in the fairly recent past. Who do they play? Who do they hate? Like, who am I supposed to hate, you know? Have the fun sports hate. And they're like, New Mexico State. I was like, what? Arkansas State. It's like, okay. Well, what about SMU? I'm like, there's hate, but they don't ever play. I was like, okay, well, okay. How do you feel about UTSA?
I dislike them. I dislike their fans. I think you know, most of their fans are dicks, but I mean, that's just my opinion. And yeah, look, it's not really a rivalry though until we beat them, because I don't think that they hate us like we hate them right now. We hate them more for what they did in 2013 than anything else, really.
Yeah, and if you go back into the Mean Green Nation podcast archives, you will find that we did a podcast the day after. I did it from, was it not quite the square? It was Banter. I did it from Banter. And you can hear Justin Brummett, who used to be on the show as a regular. He was just like, yeah, you know, before the game, I didn't really think too much. I was like, yeah, sure, you know, good little team they can. I'm kind of rooting for them as like maybe a second team, you know. They, yeah, it seemed cool, whatever. San Antonio's a cool place. But afterwards, he was like, I think I hate them. I think I hate that team.
And, I remember.
Yeah, I posited beforehand that we had to, like, if anything was going to happen, we had to take the first loss. Maybe not the first two, but definitely the first loss. Because we can take it. It was like that Batman thing, right? You know, like, you know, we'll be the bad guy because we can take it. Because we put it on our shoulders, right? We'll be what this rivalry needs us to be. Because we were the existing program, the established program. And I've said this is a fact. And here's some UTSA fans who, you know, are really sensitive peoples. I guess when you got a newborn, you're really sensitive. You don't want to hear anybody say anything bad. Hey, don't talk about my program. Don't talk about my team. So that any loss, and you could go back and, like, read about it, any loss in the first, like, 2 or 3 years was, well, I mean, that was really good if you consider how far along this program is. To go from nothing to losing by only 20 is a really – it's really an accomplishment if you think about it, you know? So – everything was a moral victory. They won every game, basically. So if we won, if we had beat them there, they're like, well, North Texas is a really good defense. They're at home playing for the title game. So you really got to respect the way the UTSA went up there and even competed with them. You know, that was going to be the narrative after. And so they were playing with nothing. It was just all, you know, we're just going to go up here and win. And we had everything on us. It was our first winning season in, was it 4 or 5 years, 6 years, 7 years?
I forget. A long time.
Yeah. And it was for a place possibly in a conference championship game. You know, we basically controlled our own destiny. It was for a perfect home season. It was for a lot of things. And you can tell that we didn't come out playing our best, because the week prior, it was a homecoming against, what are they called? The UTEPs. We whooped them. They came out and they're flying around against UTSA. Now, this is not to take away from UTSA, because they were a solid, scrappy team. But they didn't do anything contrary to popular opinion. They didn't go down there, go up there and whoop our ass. They won by 8 points. And they controlled the game, but a lot of it was like UTSA played as poor. I mean, UNT played as poorly as they did against, like, Tulane, where they basically gave the game away. That was kind of the problem that year, 2013. Gave a lot of things away. So anyway, right. That's my problem. That's what I'm saying, is that I felt like somebody punched me in the gut. It was cold. I woke up that day. I was ready. I was like, this is amazing. And it ruined what otherwise would have been a really perfect season. We went on to go to a bowl game, and things worked out in the end, because I think we went played for a conference title game. I don't know if we would have won that one. We definitely wouldn't have hosted it. And we probably wouldn't have gone to a bowl game that had as much resonance as going to the Hard Dallas Bowl. But that might be just me. What do you think about that?
It was a bad day. And it kind of started off. But I still like what I said to you earlier. It's like the hate is really coming from our side, and the arrogance is on their side, and it just makes us hate them more. They don't really care about us, because if you listen to all their people talk this week, you know, they're going up against the worst team in college football. So they think that even though they're a one-win team, they should destroy us. that you know, North Texas is somebody that's just absolutely horrible. It's not even a close matchup. There's no reason, you know, this game should even be played. We're going to just, you know, rub their face in the dirt and, you know, kick their ass. That's their feeling. That's their mentality this week. And it just pecks, you know, it just bugs you. It bugs me seeing that because there really are two evenly matched teams. They're not great. You know, you listen to their people talk, and they're talking about, well, we have this great defense, and, you know, our offense sucks, but you know what? Our defense is really good. And they're like, yeah, but if you look at the stats, your defense looks like it sucks, too. And you could say the same thing about us, because we probably feel like, you know what? We're not as bad as the stats say we are. But then other people, they look at the stats, and they're like, you guys really suck.
Yeah, them come into this game saying, well, we are definitely better than this team. Look at these numbers. That doesn't bother me because, yeah, we did get beaten. And I think other people are like, oh, I don't know how you can even pretend do this whole UTSA hate week thing when we got beat 6-6 or 7. I mean, what does that mean? Am I supposed to, like, not be a fan anymore? Like, not ever care, not watch any more games? That's not how it works. I feel like, if anything, I just can't be embarrassed anymore. Like, the bottom fell. I realized there's another level down here. I didn't even know. To steal a line from Ant-Man, I went, you know, to the quantum realm of embarrassment that, you know, what is your worst nightmare prior to it? If you look on the boards, our collective worst nightmare was losing to an FCS team. They're like, wow. Right. What if we lost to that team? Oh, my God, everything would be awful. Well, guess what?
Right.
We didn't just lose. We got embarrassed. We got destroyed.
Right.
We're still standing here. We're still here.
We bottomed out.
Yeah.
We bottomed out at Portland State. But ever since then, we've been slightly getting better.
Yes.
I don't know if you could say the same about UTSA. I don't know where they stand, but they don't have their starting quarterback. They're starting a walk-on. They got a lot of injuries. Granted, they're getting some guys back this week. But still, I feel like they're regressing from where they started the season as opposed to us, where we bottomed out, and now we're starting to make strides. And I think the team, they probably realize, you know what, hey, if we're going to lay it on somebody, this is the week to do it. This is the team that deserves, you know, us to go out there and play really hard.
Yeah, I think that's a great kind of segue from the preamble of, you know, kind of what's at stake here in terms of, like, embarrassment and history of the quote-unquote rivalry. Even if it's me just forcing a rivalry upon you, you know, just deal with it, man. I'm having fun. That's what this thing's all about. And, you know, like I said, full disclosure, I am down here in San Antonio. I go to the UTSA's grad school. I'm from San Antonio. And I had started the first, you know, UTSA blog that got any popularity and a podcast. And then I kind of gave up on it. So there's that. All while I was doing Mingo Nation at the same time. And I've gotten flack for on both sides about that. And it's been it's stupid. So anyway, so like going into this game, I think that you make a great point. And that's why I don't look at the whole season stats. Because, one, we had a different quarterback. We had a different coach. We had a different philosophy. And we're playing different teams. So you can throw out everything up to Portland State. Because that's a completely different team, almost.
Right.
And, yeah. Yeah, I mean, other than the roster, but, like, the attitude's different. The coaching staff's different. The outlook is different. Everything is different. So it's pretty much from Western Kentucky, and even that has an asterisk by it because it was 4 days, 4 days from the Portland State debacle. We should call that, like, AP, you know, after Portland State. You know, so, like, after that, 4 days later, we played We played Western Kentucky, and they pretty much handled us. But we quarterback threw for 4 touchdown passes, hasn't been done in a long time. And Marshall, last week, we both said we'd like to see what was going to happen here. And I think you can't come away from that game with anything, considering the circumstances. There was, you know, mitigating circumstances, people playing with heavy hearts. The team played well. They put out a good performance. They lost 30-13. The defense played the best that they've played in weeks ever, pretty much. And And the offense looked it looked like it was trying to do some things, but it had some obvious problems. Where do you see this offense going into UTSA?
I think this is the week that we see, you know, this is a good barometer, good measuring stick for, you know, Western Kentucky's defense was pretty good. Marshall's defense was obviously like the tops in Conference USA. Their pass defense was really good. And we brought it out on, you know, our podcast before the Marshall game that, hey, this defense is really good. So kind of temper your expectations for the offense coming off the Western Kentucky game. And we saw that their defense put, you know, DeMarcus Smith in a lot of tough situations. He was still trying to make the big play rather than, you know, like Coach Canella said, the right play. You know, even if it's 3rd and 13, take the quick slant when they're all out blitzing you, because you never know. You know, I've always of the opinion, let your playmakers make a play. So in that situation, throw the quick slant, let him make a play. If he doesn't get the first down, so what? You live to fight another day. You don't, you know, you don't force a sack, you don't force a pass, you know, you don't take a shot. Little things like that that we, you know, we kind of wanted to see and we didn't see it. So the one positive thing from the offense was the running game. And it's been the running game ever since Portland State and since DeMarcus Smith's been in there. 200 yards a game. I think we'll see UTSA's run defense is pretty good. They're ranked 48th in the country. Our run offense is ranked 48th in the country right now. So that'll be a very important battle for this game. You know, who's able to control the line of scrimmage, who's able, because Jeffrey Wilson really needs to be the guy for us in this game. If we're going to have a chance, lots of Jeffrey Wilson, lots of Willie Ivory, sprinkle in some DeMarcus Smith, and then see what you can do with your passing game. But like I said, I think this, the offense is close. I think they're close. Like, you know, Coach Canales would said, you saw that the big plays were there against Marshall. He missed the read to Marcus Smith down the middle. And that comes with time. That comes with time and repetition in the offense. Go back and look. I don't know if anybody watched the Saturday night football game, which was Ohio State and Rutgers. Not a lot of people probably watched that game. But I was watching it early on, and Herb Street was describing JT Barrett not having a lot of reps. He missed a similar play that DeMarcus Smith missed. He had, you know, Braxton Miller wide open, nobody around him running down the middle for a touchdown, and he didn't throw it to him. So it's not just happening at North Texas. It's happening all across the country when you make a quarterback switch like we did. He didn't get the reps throughout summer. He didn't get the reps throughout the fall practice, and now he's trying to play catch up. And it's frustrating for some of the wide receivers, but I think this week is a good week for him to really show what he can do, because UTSA's pass defense is not good at all.
Yeah, I mean, all that, though, those are great points. That's exactly the things that I saw there. And we had said this previously, like, I'd really like to see the offense be Jeffrey Wilson, DeMarcus Smith, play action off of that, and basically reading off of that. But the primary option should be Jeffrey Wilson. And when they sneak up, when the defense tries to adjust to contain Wilson in our run game, then we read off of him, you know. And I don't like the inverted V where DeMarcus Smith is diving into the line. It's not really my favorite play, but, you know, you got to mix it up. I like him play action off of that, even if you want to go super old school and just have him bootleg off of it. But that's dangerous. You keep him honest that way. And we've talked before in the podcast about constraint plays and things. The thing is to keep him honest, right? I think that we can run on any team's base defense. We played the conference's best rush defenses already, and we've ran against them. We put up 100, like, Wilson had 136 yards rushing against Southern Miss. He had 138 against Marshall. We had, you know, and he had a lot of yards against West Kentucky, like yards per carry. We just didn't give him the ball a lot. We can run the ball. And sure, some of that is because we're already down and they're like kind of, they're daring us to pass or something like that. They're keeping them on, especially when DeMarcus Smith is out there, to keeping everything in front of him. But that's why he's out there, and that's why he helps us, because he can run. He can make plays. I don't like that we went like 5 wide. And a lot of this has been rehashed if you've been on any message board or even read Mean Green Nation in the recap. We got blitzed a couple times. Like, I think we had 3 plays where we went empty backfield, 5 wide, and we basically got 8 up. We got a sack, and obviously there was that interception. that came right when DeMarcus Smith tried to make a play, because that was the only thing he could do, is shift out of the way. He tried to make a play, so I didn't even put that interception on him. The one where he stepped out of the way, threw it, the ball hit the guy's hands. Was his hand or his face mask? It fell right into his hands. I don't blame DeMarcus Smith for that. I blame Mike Kanellis for that awful play call. That was the third straight time that we got a five-wide set blown up in our face. Essentially, we need to run and we need to play action. All the good plays that he made, and you were talking about this, him getting ahead of himself, him missing reads, everything that we need to do, getting the ball down the field, can be done off of play action pass. And it keeps him steady. You know, you get some rhythm. He has to read the defense, set his feet, and throw to one or two guys that are already coming open. You know, it slows him down a little bit, and it makes the game easier. It's just that read, that throw that he needs to make. He doesn't have to go through his progressions. And that's kind of really what I'd like to see. I know we're getting some technical difficulties there. I know you're dipping in and out.
I can hear you still.
Okay, good. All right.
I'd like to see him make throws where his feet are set. I think that's one of the biggest things I want to see in this game is, you know, the drop back pass, set his feet, and let it rip. I don't – the one play where, you know, it was a play action, you know, he ran to the left and then tried to throw it to a guy that was slanting across the middle, you know, to the right, across his body. I don't want to see the quarterback make that throw. I mean, he's not Aaron Rodgers. You know, he's not a professional. He's not a great college quarterback. Those aren't the type of throws he should be asked to make right now. It should be those throws that you talked about, the very simple play action, let it rip, you know, deep down the field, or easy quick slants over the middle, you know, very similar to what Baylor does off their play action game. Those are the type of throws I want to see DeMarcus Smith make. And I think those are the type of throws that this offense could really, you know, take advantage of defenses.
Yeah, I mean, all right, look, there was a couple times where we're gashing them for runs. We're gashing them. And I think we had a series there where I was tweeting, and I was like, all right, I called them play 1, 2, and 3. 1 is Jeffrey Wilson. 2 is DeMarcus Smith. Keeper off on a read, and 3 is a play action pass. And I think we hit 1, 2, or 3, 4 or 5 straight plays. And then we decided to, you know, just go forwards on them, which is not a bad play. And that's the one that went off. So we got off schedule. Then we tried to do something crazy, and then that missed. And then we're like, okay, third down, let's go 5 wide. And then we got sacked. So, okay. I mean, and the thing is, like, hey, don't be aggressive. Like, stay conservative. That's not what I'm saying. It's be smart. Take your shots in a smart way. Do some play action. Have him look deep. If it's not there or he misfires, cool. We'll do it in the next play. Or he can check down, throw a 2-3 yard gain to somebody, or a quick little screen, something that gets the ball into our playmaker's hands so they can make a play, exactly as you said.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to run against him. Southern Miss runs a 4-2-5 kind of thing. They kind of, I think their guy called it a 4-3 with like a nickel guy. He's basically playing the third linebacker. And UTSA runs a 4-2-5 defense. They don't run the exact same version of it, but it's similar in alignment and things. And we were able to run on Southern Miss. Now, granted, Southern Miss was scoring all over us, so it was kind of a different game. But I think we can run on UTSA. I had a couple of cut-ups there that I was watching, and I like everything that we do against the way they lined up. And I think we can run some of the actions that we had against Marshall, who has a really good rush defense, against UTSA. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, you know, Sam Rice, they highlighted him in the last game as the offensive line. I think they've done a lot better with their run blocking in the recent games than they have with the pass blocking. That's kind of where we thought they'd be at the beginning of the season, but they really just struggled with everything early on, and it kind of seems like their run blocking is getting a lot better. And, you know, Sam Rice, he played a pretty good game last week.
Yeah, we have, I mean, really, I've seen Willie Ivory get into space on some, like, counter. We do, like, a counter tray, which is basically you pull the guard and a tackle, and then you kind of pull them around. It's a power move. You get linemen in space, get them out in open field, creating blocks. And we've done good jobs, like doing inside zone, which everybody kind of blocks. They don't really do have a whole lot of pulling action there. We do good on that. There's not really a run that we're not okay at the very least. But all those ones where you saw Jeffrey Wilson come around the end with a couple linemen and, like, cut up and get, like, 20, 30 yards. The one he had was 38 yards. That was off a counter in the second half. That's that counter stuff. Some of it's, like, power, but there's a lot of the pulling lineman kind of things. We're really good at it, and we were good at it against Southern Miss, and I think we can do the same thing on UTSA. I'm coming away from just doing a little mini film study today and this afternoon. I was pleasantly surprised by looking at that, and I think that we're going to be okay doing that. So, like you said, this is a nice barometer game. Is it somebody our speed? Maybe even I'd contend that UTSA is maybe trending downward, as you were saying. Talking about the poor recruiting, people are dissatisfied. Now they can't claim moral victories anymore. They're expecting to win some things, and they're not. They are, barring us, they are one of the worst teams in college football.
But their fan base thinks that they should shut us out this week.
I mean, I'd be thinking the same thing. When you look, if I were a UTSA fan and blogger and whatever else there is, I'd say we should be beating this team. This is the barometer for our guys, Larry Coker and whoever else. Is it the Brown guy that's our offensive coordinator? They should be able to score against this defense, meaning UNT's defense. They should be able to stop this offense, the worst offense in the nation, et cetera, et cetera. I'd expect that. I expect that from them. So whatever. Their expectations are their own expectations. I feel we can score against UTSA's defense, and I feel we can definitely stop them. That we should win this game. Come into the season, I call this a win. Even if we had Andy Mack out there. I don't really see a situation where we should not win. I think we're a 7-point favorite, 7-point underdog now. And I think were it not for the history of the season up to this point, we'd definitely be favorites for this game. What do you think? It opened at 12,
probably,
now
so.
It's 7.
Obviously a lot of people were taking UTSA. That's why it's dropping down. Because they think they're going to beat us worse. I think we've talked a lot about our offense versus their defense. And, clearly that seems to be our strength versus their strength. Mm-hmm. But what about their offense versus our defense? We saw improvement last week against Marshall. They weren't a great offense. Everybody thought that, even Vito thought that they were, some good offense. And the Marshall, beat writer guy was like, we're not really that good. Obviously they did some things. They jumped out to the 17-point lead on us. We couldn't really stop anything. But then, starting to get into the end of that second quarter, and then in really the second half, our defensive line was finally starting to win battles. They were starting to get off of blocks. They were starting to get a push. They were starting to make plays in the backfield. And then our secondary, I really like the Nate Brooks kid because he brings an attitude at the corner. Like, even if he gets burnt on a player, if he gets beat, he's still a fighter out there, and I like that guy.
Yeah, he doesn't get mentally beat down. He has that cliche attitude where, he has a short memory, and, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what happened on the previous play. All that matters is this play. So he makes pass deflection, and he'll get in a receiver's face and talk some mess. I like that also.
Yeah, so, one person brought it up, fixing the defense. What people would you put in, or what would you necessarily do to fix the defense? I saw they put Finney in at where Scott was, and they moved Scott over to the middle. I like that move, and it seemed like it worked out because both those guys are playmakers at the linebacker position, and I really liked how that worked out for us. I don't know how you felt or if you noticed that when you were doing your film study.
I hadn't got to the defense really closely, but yeah.
I just worry about offense. Yeah.
I'm an offensive kind of guy. No, all right. Like, for me, we've said this before. It all starts on the defensive line, that our linebacker play hasn't been awful. Like, they're not doing anything completely bad. They can't get off blocks as easily or as quickly as we'd like them to. But a lot of it is because they have, the the other team's line is getting to the second level already. And it's difficult, very difficult, to take on linemen play after play after play. And sometimes we get beat doing that. And same thing with the defensive backs. Nate Brooks, like, anybody you name. One, again, we've had injuries there. So we got young guys playing or, you know, backups playing essentially. And they've had to guard without any pass rush. We're giving up, was it the worst, like 200 yards plus a game rushing defensively. So all that starts in the defensive line. In against Marshall, we finally got penetration into the backfield where we're blowing up plays before they start. Once we got into that young kid's face, what was his name again? The Marshall quarterback kid?
Linton?
Yeah.
Chase Linton.
Once we got in his face, then all of a sudden we looked like a really good defense again. And it's funny how that happens. Once you get some defensive line penetration, get him off blocks, get him into the quarterback's face, all of a sudden everybody looks like they're, you know, two levels better. And, I mean, Nate Brooks is getting pass deflections. We were forcing bad throws, errant throws. All of a sudden their receivers weren't looking like they were catching everything because the ball wasn't hitting them right in the chest anymore. Same thing, like they're running backs didn't look like the next coming of Barry Sanders when they had dudes, you know, meeting them at the ball. That said, I think they exceeded their yards per carry average. They still had 400 yards. They still had 200 yards rushing. And especially in that 17-0 streak there in the first half, they were gashing us. The kid they kept talking about that was a converted wide receiver, I swear, like, the whole narrative of the game was about how that guy switched from wide receiver, and they didn't believe him. But last week he had 120 yards, and I mean, yeah, he was quick, but he's getting the ball running straight ahead, and there's huge holes for him to run into.
Right.
That concerns me a little bit about UTSA. Is that Jarvion Williams is a true running back? He didn't get converted over, and boy, let me tell you, he did a good job converting over last week. And nobody, none of that. He's a running back. He can make plays in the open field. He can shed tackles. That's kind of where it concerns me. That those 10, 15, 20 yard runs that that Marshall kid was getting, well, Jarvion Williams has the talent to turn those into 70 yard runs, and that's right. A little concerning.
Yeah, he's very explosive. The guy that you're talking about for Marshall, he was explosive too. He had the breakaway speed, all that stuff.
But Jarvion Williams, Foster, yeah, that's his name.
Yeah, Jarvion he's been doing it for a longer period of time, and yes. He's the type of back that's been giving us trouble. Now the thing is Chase Linton is a better quarterback than Dalton Sturm by far, by way far. We're talking, you know, redshirt. Is he a sophomore? I think he's a sophomore. He's a transfer quarterback, but he's still not at the same level as Linton is. So that's going to hurt UTSA's offense. You know, he threw for 200 something yards, I think, against UTEP, but then the previous week against Southern Miss, he was terrible because their offensive line, they couldn't block Southern Miss defensive line for anything in that game. He was like 6 of 22 for 66 yards. So I don't know what we're going to get out of that guy. They have some weapons on the outside. You know, David Morgan gets a lot of pub for them. They're tight end. That's going to be a tough matchup. Who draws him? Is it James Gray, the safety? Is it one of our linebackers? Because our linebackers, those guys don't really cover well. So that matchup could be an issue. Outside of that, I share the, you know, similar concern to you, is Jarvion Williams. Can we stop him? Can we limit his big plays? If we take away the UTSA running game and we force Sturm to beat us, then we have a really good chance of winning this game.
Yeah, and that's really it. And I think there's two ways to do it. Two ways of making that guy, you know, beat us. One is scoring points. That it's real easy to sit down, turn around, and hand the ball off to Jarvion Williams and, you know, let him grind out yardage and clock and go down there and get a field goal for him because, you know, they don't feel any pressure. We're not putting them deep, pinning them deep. And here's another thing. Even if we're not scoring, there's a couple times, and I really like this against Marshall, where we move the ball, and even the drive stopped, we were being aggressive, going for it on fourth down. I liked that. I loved all of that. It put pressure on Marshall. They had to do some fakes a couple times, right? They had to fake the punt. We had three straight three and outs against them. And the third one, you know, they got a first down because they faked the punt. They had to get some trickeration on us. That's good. That put us in the game. I think with the natural evolution, a lower caliber opponent, that some of those drives where we were driving and shooting ourselves in the foot, maybe we at least get a field goal. Maybe we get a touchdown here. And then it's a whole different game. Then Dalton Sturm has to throw the ball. He can't just, you know, turn around and hand the ball off. And the other thing is that, again, their offensive line is full of injuries and they can't block right now. That for all of our criticism of our own offense, one thing is that we don't really get sacked that often. We get the ball out and we can run okay. You know what I mean? We're not just getting destroyed. And if Southern Miss, everybody was kind of tweeting about this while they were playing UTSA and Southern Miss. I think it was a late Conference USA game, so there's a lot of conversation about it. That the kid was getting beat up. He was just getting, you know, sacked all over the place. I think Southern Miss is their highlight reel highlighted a bunch of sacks they got on him. I think we can get pressure on the dude. We sacked Litton. We also sacked the Iowa quarterback. What's his name? Beathard.
Beathard.
Yeah. We can get to the quarterback. It's not completely out of the realm of our abilities. You know, we got to Matt Davis. We've gotten to quarterbacks. Our defense has gotten gashed, yes. But it's not the same defense. It's not the same defense as it was against Portland State. There was improvement, and it's not just because Marshall was not that good. It was because we were doing good things. It was not like Marshall was, you know, a clown show. I was going to curse a clown show back there. It was because we were getting to the backfield. It wasn't because, you know, the quarterback was just missing targets. It's because we had a dude in his face. You know, we were making things happen, and that's what's good to me. When, you know, when you get a stop because the guy just threw three straight incompletions, just throwing it to the moon, well, you know, you can't really pat yourself on the back for that. But when you get a sack on first down, when you bat the ball away on second down, and you defend like hell on third down, that's great. That's a quality defensive stop. That's quality defensive footballing. And I think that's what I said on the recap. So I think we can get in his face. There's two things. Get in his face, play some offense. We can win. And again, it's up here, man. We don't have that slick turf that they had over there in Huntington, West Virginia. For whatever reason, DeMarcus Smith was slipping all over the place in that game. That really kind of affected things.
I mean, and it shouldn't really be raining for the game. The rain should have already moved out by the time we get to game time. It should be in the 60s with a nice breeze from the northwest front move through. So it'll be cool. It'll be November football weather.
Yeah, it's good. I'm looking forward to this for a lot of reasons. I think we can get our first one. I'm gonna go ahead and give you a sneak peek, little previews of the remix, meaning my prediction. I think we're gonna win this one, and I don't know if we're gonna win. We're not gonna blow them out, but oh my god, wouldn't that be great if we just like unleashed just some, you know, weirdness? We pull like a Texas against Oklahoma from a couple weeks ago, where you're just like, where did this team come from, man? They're out here just scoring touchdowns all day. That would be the greatest thing ever in the history of ever, I think.
You know, I've taken, you know, my dad's coming up for the game, and he doesn't go to games often, and normally when he goes to games, they win. Now, he was at the football game where we threw the 99-yard touchdown pass.
The Rice game?
You're
talking about the Casey Fitzgerald one.
Yeah, he was at the game where the Louisiana Lafayette game, where the Jimerson screened for a touchdown.
Oh, that was a great, great day.
And he was at the Rice game.
2 years ago, the Halloween game?
Yeah, 2 years ago for the Stand.
That was great. Good times.
So he's seen some good games. He's only seen them lose twice. but he's never seen them lose in consecutive years. So I'm feeling good about it. I'm feeling good. He's coming up. He's the big play for this weekend for me.
I like that.
Damn it, we need a win. calling on my dad. Come through, sir.
Yeah, I like that. That's real good. Looking at the stats again, I feel like we're perfectly aligned for this. It would be an upset, but it's one of those kind of kissing your sister upset. It's like, oh, if we're going to pull an upset, we'd rather it have been against Iowa or, you know, Tennessee in a week. But, you know, I'll take this
At this
one.
Point, I don't yeah. really care. If yeah, this is either. Our upset, I'll enjoy it for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and a lot of it is because I got a lot of friends that go to UTSA, or I mean, as undergrads, and, you know, they like talking mess, and it's fun. It's fun to beat your friends at something, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, we came in last week as the conference's worst scoring defense, averaging 50, allowing 50 a game. I think we only knocked off a few points off of that average when we stopped Marshall and held them to only 30. But, again, I think Marshall was averaging 31 a game. So it's not, you know, it's not like we did some amazing job. I think, what is UTSA average? I forgot off the top of my head, and I didn't write it down.
They're averaging 20.9, so 21 points a game. That's for the season, and they're giving up 35.
Okay, and we're giving up, 47 a game, and we are only averaging what now?
Like 16?
16 a game, and a half? Yeah, something 17? Like that. That's about right. So what do you have a prediction? I'm going to just say we're going to win. I don't have a point prediction, because I feel... At a rivalry, you throw all the stats out the window. You throw the records out the window. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think the second time I'm picking North Texas to win, and I think that they come through. I think, like you said, everything kind of aligns for them to take this game. You know, I'm pretty sure UTSA. You know, they don't think that North Texas is that good. The players don't. Oh, you know, they got beat by 59 by Portland State. You know, nah. That's in their minds. It's in everybody's minds that we play. They can't be that good. You know, mm-hmm. So, but again, like I said, they're evenly matched. I don't see how you could say that UTSA is that much better than North Texas. The players on the field, you know, the statistics, they're pretty close. They're, you know, both these teams are not very good, but
yeah.
each team's fan base, though, you know, feels good about their team going into this week. Well, you know, some North Texas fans feel good. The other ones, they're still talking about the Rick Villarreal and all that crap.
Yeah, but, I mean, you always have to remember that we have a subset of North Texas fans that always feel bad about everything ever. Yeah, you know, that's kind of our deal. Yeah, you just, you know, going from top to bottom, quarterbacks match up. I wouldn't say that you have a definite advantage. Maybe our quarterback's more talented than their quarterback, but he also has, you know, he's like been cramming for this test, you know what I mean, for a long time. He's getting better, but I can't really expect leaps and bounds better. If he's going to make plays, it's going to be he's going to uncork a ridiculous throw and make some crazy runs. But it's going to be just off pure talent. And if their quarterback is a success, it's because our defense is going to be a little iffy and allow them a lot of time to throw. And anybody playing at this level should be able to complete a pass with 6-7 seconds of passing time. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that, but, I mean, you know. Running backs, you're like, well, Jarvion Williams, he seems dangerous. Yeah, we have game-breaking running backs. Jeffrey Wilson, Antoine Jimerson, Willie Ivory. We got guys that can run the ball. You look at the receivers. I'm not really well versed in their receiver. They ain't got like a guy Thomas. Like you said, really, it's the tight end. Well, we have a guy and guys that can make plays. Tigori a couple weeks ago had that incredible catch. We got Darvin Kidzie. We got Carlos Harris. We got guys that can make plays if we get the ball to them. So there's not a clear advantage there. And then again, defensively, they may have. A stouter defense, like talent-wise, like they got the Bennett Okocha.
Yeah, I think their defensive line, and probably if you know, like you just said, Okocha in their secondary, probably their linebacker. They, you know, they're probably a little bit more talented than we are on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and but you know, like I said, I'm not. You know, that's. I think we have the dynamism. To get around that, like our, like is their offense so much better than our defense, or is like our defense just completely worse? Like, I don't really think so. I think they're going to kind of play this stalemate, and I think, you know, we just need to hit them once or twice with some scores that they may shut us down, they may force some turnovers, or they may just get us in three and outs. But I think we got DeMarcus Smith. He can make plays. He can make plays that you should not make as a quarterback, right? A given quarterback should not be able to make. A 70-yard throw across the field, you know, hit a guy there. That shouldn't happen, right? Everybody was like, what is that? He should not be able to dance around all four of your linemen, turn around, fire a throw across the field, and get a 7-yard reception out of it. That shouldn't happen. So I feel like as long as we uncork one or two of those, we should be okay. We can overcome a more talented defense with some great plays.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I think our special team's good. We still have Trevor Moore and, you know.
You know, our return game has just been kind of disappointing. You know, we were spoiled with Kidsey's plays last year, the punt return against, you know, the high school team and Nichols. And, you know, but he had the kickoff return for a touchdown against Rice. So we were expecting big things, and it just hadn't been there. And they put Bradley back there at kickoff returns, and he really didn't do well last week against Marshall. So, and now they put the little guy, Trey Johnson, back there for punt returns. So
I just
want to see our special teams, you know, a big play, big play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if they put Jeffrey Wilson back there. That'd be interesting. He really needs more touches. He's averaging 15 and a half, I think, carries a game. That really needs to be up there around 20, 25 carries a game. He's our best player. And I don't mean they're like, well, you know, what about Carlos Harris? Well, Carlos Harris, even though he's tried, he can't get the ball to himself, you know? We try giving the ball in sweeps, but as a receiver, you are dependent on a lot of other things. The offensive line blocking, the coverage kind of not being, you know, geared to stop you, and somebody finding you out there. So as good as Carlos Harris is, it's hard to get him the ball every play. But, you know, you turn around and hand the ball off to Jeffrey Wilson, and he does good things with it. He's averaging 6.4 yards a carry, the highest we've had as in a running back since Lance Dunbar. You might remember him. He's our all-time leading rusher. And, you know, he had 8.1 against Marshall, a really good Marshall defense, rushing defense. Again, that means something. What does that mean? It means he needs more carries.
I'm with you.
No. Was it Leonard Fournette had 15, 16 carries in the first half against Western Kentucky last week, right? I don't see why we can't get 15, 16 carries in the first half against UTSA. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm thinking like, you know, 25 touches per game, whether that's, you know, 20 rushes, 5 catches, you know, because obviously they started off with a little, you know, flare out pass, you know, the swing pass to him, those type of things. Anyways, you can get the ball in his hands. I'm not really a fan of him on the kickoff returns.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think those are like unnecessary shots where guys are just, you know, flying down. You see more people get hurt, you know, doing that on the kickoff return. So I'm not really a fan of that. We can find somebody else to return a kickoff, but yeah, I'm with you. He needs more touches, more ways to find, you know, get him the ball. You know, you're talking about the Carlos Harris sweeps. One thing I'd like to see off of that is play action off the sweep, because everybody knows when Carlos Harris is going in motion across, it's probably going to be a handoff. I'd like to see a little play action with a guy, you know, crossing, little slant pattern or something, you know, get the defense thinking you're going one way and then throw it back across, something like that.
Football is a simple game, right? I mean, there's two ways to get to the end zone. You can go through somebody, you go around them, right? And it helps if you fake one way. I fake, I'm going to go through you, and now I'm going to go around you, right? That seems like, whoa. But that's a lot of football. Play action is, you thought we're going to go through you, now we're going to go over the top, so we're around you, right? That's all it is. It's really a simple game. And, yeah, you're right, that when we telegraph our play, I mean, we don't really have an offense that's good enough to call out the play. Like, we're going to run power right here, guys. And you're like, well, we know that, and we probably still won't be able to stop you. That's obviously the ideal, but, you know, we don't have NFL talent, you know, top to bottom. I was at Florida State, had that somebody tweeted a picture about Florida State's offense and defense when they won the national championship a couple years ago, and how everybody is a starter or playing in the NFL right now, like everybody, and they're starting 22. We don't quite have that. Yeah, we got some talent. We don't quite have top to bottom NFL talent out here.
No.
So maybe a little trickery, a little fake one way, go the other way. I was at Ohio State, had that. I think it's like it's basically the counter thing where they had the guy fake the jet sweep. You fake that, you turn around, you hand it to the running back. Ohio State killed Oregon with that. Ezekiel Elliott gets it. You got two pulling linemen blocking for him. It's great. I love pulling linemen, man. I think that's like the, I don't know, it's great. I think that's fun football to watch.
I like seeing big man move.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, you know, there's a lot of cool things about football, right? Seeing a guy like Tego re-catch, that was pretty great. DeMarcus Smith uncorking the throw, that's all great. But, you know, when you see two linemen clearing the path, they're running out there and everybody's getting on their blocks and then it's perfectly timed. The running back comes through, you know, drops it into fourth gear and just takes off. Right, through the whole, that's just great. Yeah. You're like, everything, you know, it's all part of the plan is coming together, just like we practiced and
we have a pretty athletic offensive line.
Yeah.
We mentioned it really early in the season, and now we're starting to see it. You know, get those big men moving.
Yeah. You always know you have a good offensive line when you see people pulling the center. You don't often see that because, you know, you feel kind of scared, but we do that occasionally.
Yeah.
What else we got? We got a coaching update. On the list. So you wrote up a post on this. It was an update. And someone was like, how reliable is this blog anyway? Well, I mean, it is the internet. And we did get trolled the fuck out by UTSA. That was good. That was quality trolling guy. I think guy is like at not Dan with two N's. So this is a little bit of internet fame because afterwards he was like, hey, does anybody want to see me keep doing this? You can follow me. I'll do it again, I promise. It'll be real fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I saw it tweeted out by Underdog Dynasty guys. And I was like, what is this? I was like, you know, is this real? Like, I kind of looked at it as like DSW Sports Wire. And here's the thing. I give people on the internet benefit of the doubt. Because, say, Chris Brown, right? SmartFootball.com. He was just a guy for a while. Just writing a blog, and you know now he's writing for the New York Times, Grantland. I mean, he has like some pedigree and stuff. But you know, good stuff can come from anywhere, so I don't immediately discount it. But I looked at it, I was like, okay, like what is this? Like, what do you mean when? And it kind of makes sense. This is why it was a perfectly good troll. And then I looked down, and I looked at his first followers, because that's usually how you can tell somebody that doesn't like put their name on it. Like, who are these people? The people that they first followed and the people that immediately followed them. And it looked like it was just a guy. I was like, 67 followers. I don't know who this guy is. I was giving the benefit of the doubt. And then I saw like some snickering in around Twitter, like, oh, some people are pulling an epic troll job. Oh, my God. And he followed that up with like another one about he faked being like Chris Mortensen. He was Mort Report with two T's. And he got a bunch of people like, oh, of course, it was the Ryan Mallett thing. And then I saw him tweet like, oh, okay, I'm just back. Hey, if I had more followers, it'd be real cool. Cause then we can really troll them.
If you go look, Vito is one of his followers now.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I was like, really? Come on, Brent. You're better than that. You're better.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing is that it's kind of funny in a way. But here's the thing, you really, you know, start burning up a bridge when you do that. Like, nobody likes being faked like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you had talked to Mangino, and it sounds, you know, Mangino's the type of hire that we think, like, our athletic director would make. Like, he would be that, that dumb to do that. So, you know, that's why it sounded believable. But, you know, give credit. You know, it's got to suck to be like a real reporter, like Vito, because he's got to go run that stuff down.
Yeah, I know. You know,
just to be sure. And, you know, I went and asked Iowa State people, hey, did you hear anything about this? And they're like, no, we haven't heard anything. And okay, you know, at least we did some due diligence on it and, you know, found it to be fake regardless of, you know, whatever they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, so that was funny. I think it was a good troll job because how everybody reacted to it. That's a good way to be fake is if it's something that's very plausible. We had thought that before. I think somebody had brought that up on a message board. What about Mark Mangino? So, you know, there was already something on our minds. I had already put my thoughts on it like a couple weeks ago, like I said. So I saw that. I was like, I don't know how trustworthy this is, but here are my thoughts in case it's true. And then similar with the other one the guy did with Ryan Mallett. Everybody was like, oh, of course Jerry Jones would sign Ryan Mallett because he just got cut. Arkansas kid. He loves everybody from Arkansas. You know, he's like on a quest to comprise that good Arkansas team of the McFadden years. Yeah. You already had Felix Jones. Now you got McFadden now.
Anyway. Yeah, so we updated the tracker. We talked about Mangino. We learned through, a couple sources that, Willie Fritz is the top target for North Texas. That's the guy that they want. Whether or not they can get him, that's a different story. That's not, and I thought that was funny too, because people said, here's North Texas thinking that they're going to get Willie Fritz and everything from what we wrote. Nah, I said, that's not really what I wrote. I wrote that he was the top of the wish list. Doesn't mean you're going to get him or that they think that they can get him. That's just, hey, that's the guy we're going to take a shot at,
I mean, and that's only smart. Like, you want a program that can get and goes after the best guys out there. And I don't necessarily want Willie Fritz, but it's more for, like, aesthetic reasons and not necessarily the kid can come here and coach. There's plenty of guys who can come here and coach and do a good job. I'd like, a certain kind of guy. Whatever.
What doesn't appeal to you about Fritz?
I think it's just not really that sexy of a hire. Say, using the NFL as an example, like Bruce Arians, guy can coach. But is he, it doesn't really, it's not really fun. I don't really want to see the guy out there on my sideline coaching. But whatever. If I was going to take an NFL coach, you get like Bruce Arians, you get like Jim Harbaugh. I take Jim Harbaugh or even John Harbaugh just because they're more fun, just a little bit more interesting. It is entertainment after all. It's like Dan McCartney. He was a good coach for 2 years, 3 years, but he was kind of boring. I mean, outside of the Grey Goose thing that everybody loved, I mean, what it was kind of a boring offense, kind of a retread press conference thing, and his act wore thin after a while, Especially,
but, I don't.
Yeah, man. Whatever.
I don't think his offense though would be boring here. He would throw up more than he does at Georgia Southern. And the thing that you have to remember, he runs a, they spread the field.
Yeah.
And he runs the triple option pretty much out of spread. He did a lot of similar things at Sam Houston State, but they threw the ball more. And I think that the pieces that we have would fit his offense perfectly and make it even better because we have a quarterback that can run and throw. And then I also think, we've struggled for so long at finding a quarterback. It wouldn't be hard for him to find a quarterback in Texas to run his offense. There's plenty of read option quarterbacks just, waiting to get an offer. And we could go, in a smaller school or, a guy that's not really, seen or whatever, and he could get that guy, and then that guy could become a star in his offense. So, I also think, if people were to come to North Texas, he probably wouldn't go anywhere else. That would probably be his last stop because he's 55 years old. So, what's going to be interesting is what Power 5 team, what larger school gives him an offer? And what... where does he rank on their candidate list? Because if he's number one on ours and we can roll out the red carpet and we could tell his agent that he's going to get $1 million and we're going to give up, a large portion for his staff salary. And I mean, basically he's going to come in, not have really any pressure on him. And he's going to have pieces already to really run his offense. I mean, it just, you could see where they could make a case for him to come here. But obviously it's a long shot.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia Southern has a big following there. It has a long history. They've won, for a lot of years. I don't necessarily buy the whole, why would you leave Georgia Southern for North Texas? I mean, a lot of people like to pretend like North Texas is, out in the middle of nowhere. But it is a quality job. The facilities are, we don't have Alabama, Oregon facilities, but we got top-tier, mid-level college football facilities. Dallas is a great town. You can make a great, a home there for your family. There's something to be said for that. And you can win. And that's the other thing. I mean, people go to the middle of nowhere to go find a job that they can succeed at. Dallas has extra perks there that you can get nowhere else. And, you know, there's something to be said for those things. And it's a challenge. It is the great challenge, I think, right now. I mean, because everybody likes to, you know, people talk about like Miami, right? Oh, that's a great job. So much history. That's a difficult thing to do. It's high profile. It's, you know, there's a lot of history. There's a lot of alums that put a lot of pressure on it. And then you have these ridiculous constraints of having a private school with, you know, kind of a public school talent pool. And I don't mean that derisively, but I'm just saying that, like, I think there it came out recently that the administration likes to embrace the whole, you know, we invented swag, but they don't want to get the dudes that will continue to swag, right? They don't really want, I don't want that kind of player here, right? And they speak in all this code kind of thing. Ours is kind of the opposite, that we have, you know, we're a big public university, but there's so many other public universities that are mining the talent here. And so we can't really stretch our legs and, you know, we can't fail. That's the thing. Is that, like, anytime we fail, we get immediately dismissed. Like, you pretty much have to win immediately here to get any traction. So that, right. I think it would be good for him to come here, do that, because he could do that. I agree with your assessment of our roster. Yeah.
I mean, you know, teams that struggle, like the navies and the armies, you know, they turn to running the triple option. Well, he kind of runs a new age triple option. And a lot of those type of players are, you know, they're in Texas. So his offense could probably be even better than what it is at Georgia Southern right now. And he could win automatically in Conference USA, and he could really, he could build something sustainable for North Texas. He could build the program up to where, you know, we're a consistent winner. You know, we're always challenging for Conference USA championships. Maybe we're not, you know, being ranked or, you know, breaking into that group of five that gets to play on a New Year's Day bowl, but we're always winning, you know, or we're always at the top of Conference USA because, you know, we do things right. And he would just be a solid hire. The one thing, the one, like, you know, nobody kind of wants a retread. And this guy's name has been mentioned for the Miami job, and I don't know. I can't really see, because he's kind of struggling where he is right now because his offense isn't. They're just, you know, Dana Holgorsen at West Virginia. I'm not sure that he's going to be around. And he's one retread guy that I would, you know, because he recruits Texas now. You know, he had the, you know, time at Houston, Oklahoma State. I could see him. He'd be a guy that I might be interested. If I had to take a retread guy, it might be like a guy like Dana Holgorsen. I don't know what you thought about that.
I would love Dana Holgorsen. Here's the thing, you know, like that's unusual both about, well, that used to be unusual about like Mike Leach. He was one extreme. He's like, we're going to pass all day. We're going to throw 70 times. Our quarterbacks are going to average like 300-400 yards a game. And, you know, it's going to be ridiculous. But when we don't have the talent, like we don't have the quarterbacks there, we're going to struggle. And we're going to, you know, occasionally get blown out. It's going to be quirky, right? That was his thing. And you had the opposite side. You have Paul Johnson, right, Georgia Tech. We're going to run triple option throwback, right? And everybody else is kind of in the middle along some kind of continuum based on talent and innovation and things. And, well, you know, now that the pendulum has shifted to throwing the ball, you have a lot of air raid guys out there. You got Sonny Dykes at Cal, Dana Holgorsen. You got Cliff Kingsbury. What's his name? Neil Brown, who used to be at Troy. Where is he at right now? I think is he at Kentucky? I don't forget where he is. But you have, like you said, Todd Monken is out there. You have a lot of guys who are in these kind of systems. Spread out, you know, spreading the gospel, I guess, of their that air raid kind of thing. There's a lot of air raid concepts. I think Dana Holgorsen runs a version of it. He does a lot of running now, a lot more option than, say, Mike Leach does. Anyway, it would be fun to see, like you said, but I don't think that it would be as successful as it could have been if he came, say, in 2005, you know? So in that way, that our inability to recruit a quarterback that can run anything would be mitigated by getting a guy that says, we just need a quarterback that can run around and run the triple option. Because can you name the last three quarterbacks at Georgia Tech? No. You know, it's like, so you need a guy that can run a triple option. So you need like a throwback guy that's going to be a college football quarterback. And if he's good enough to go pro, he's going to be a receiver or a running back. And, you know, I wouldn't hate that. I wouldn't hate being a quirky, weird person. But, I mean, I love watching Paul Johnson's offense occasionally. It just can be a little frustrating when they need to come back and then they have a, you know, like a very iffy pass, set of pass plays, you know. But that may be just me. Okay, I can hear you. You have a follow-up point to that, man?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I think, Willie, are you, you're kind of talking about Fritz and running the triple option, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think it would be different. I think it would be different than Paul Johnson's because it'd be more the spread attack. And so, you know, I just like the way that DeMarcus Smith would fit in that offense and Jeffrey Wills. We could get back to leading the country in rushing yards again, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, look, as long as we're winning games, I don't care how we do it. If we come out here with a Chip Kelly up-tempo thing, fine. If we come out here with the Jim Harbaugh, we're basically playing, you know, using the playbook from the Indianapolis Colts circa 1995, that's fine too. You know, if we're doing anything to lead to wins, you know, I'm all on board.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's really the coaching search is kind of, right now it's, okay, we know who the top guy is, but
can other they get
than
him?
That, yeah, can they get him? And then other than that, it's going to take some time for other guys to throw their interests out there. You know, a lot of people like Major Applewhite, and I like Major Applewhite. I was one of the first guys that suggested Major Applewhite.
I thought of him,
you know, back before 2013, like, well, if McCartney doesn't work out, you know, I kind of like a guy like Applewhite. I think he could bring some good things to North Texas. But the thing is, with Applewhite, if we want him, I think we get him. I think we can get him because I don't think anybody else is going to offer him a head coaching job. I don't. If Tom Herman leaves Houston, he might bring Applewhite with him to his next job, you know, if it's a Power 5 job. And so Applewhite would have to weigh versus being, you know, the offensive coordinator at, let's say, South Carolina or being a head coach at North Texas. So, I mean, they're kind of...
Yeah, they're kind of similar in prestige, but one, you get to run your own program. And that's...
Yeah, you're running your own program in Texas. You're probably going to get paid a little bit more too.
Yeah.
If we continue the trend, let's say close to $1 million. So, yeah, I just think, like, you know, if the interest is there for North Texas and that's the guy that they want, Applewhite just seems to me the type of guy that he would jump on that. He just has that type of swag and confidence in him that he wants to better himself. He wants to repair his image. Yeah. You know, that was tainted by Mac Brown. And going in and running his own program and fixing a North Texas program that's kind of been broken, that would appeal to a guy like him, I think. So if we want him, I think he's there for the taking.
That would be interesting. I think he's a young guy. He's offensively oriented. I think he deserves a shot as a head coach. I don't really know how good he would be at building a staff and doing the essential things that you need to do, delegating responsibility, game management. I don't know all that. But, I mean, he quarterbacked, you know, the biggest name in Texas, right, at Texas. And I think
he was kind of a game manager for part of his career.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he kind of understands, you know, the game. He's been under some good coaches, like I said, and some good coaches have believed in him. And to me, I think that puts him over the edge, where I'd give him the benefit of the doubt. And it would be a little bit of splashy hire versus like a Willie Fritz. Like, I think Willie Fritz is probably more of a certainty that he's going to turn the program around, but I like the sexy hire of getting a Major Applewhite. And that was my point earlier that I was trying to make.
Yeah, that's about all I got for the, you know, the coaching search, you know, right now. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the game with UTSA. You know, we've gone over an hour. And is there anything – did you read the article by Scott Sidway with the North Texas Daily at all that came out today?
No, I didn't get a chance to do that. I was kind of busy. Was it? Go ahead, fill me in. Breaking news.
Not really breaking news. You know, obviously, it made its way to the Gomeen Green Board, and plenty of fans are upset about what you the comments that you read from RV. It just sounds like a delusional man. Like, does this man believe the crap that comes out of his mouth, or what? And then the president kind of throws in some comments about, you know, it kind of sounds like he's backing him, and then it doesn't sound like he's backing him. It just, where does the president sit? That's what I want to know. One, and two, how can RV sit there and believe what he says? Because half of it, you know, are lies. He called, you know, the people who are voicing their opinion against him. He said the minute few who are, you know,
the minority,
voicing.
Yeah.
And I just don't get. And then he said, you know, there's a lot of people that are talking good about basketball. I'm like, who? I get that, you know, your basketball players and the people that, you know, wear UNT on their shirt every day. Those people are talking good about basketball. You know, people within the athletic department. Who outside the athletic department has said one good thing about basketball?
Mm-hmm.
There's not. I don't. I'm like, where are you getting this from? So it just, as soon as I read it, I was like, well, this is going to piss some people off. And sure enough, it did. They're like, I don't get how he says what he says and believes it.
You're talking about this attendance one, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I know a couple of these guys, donor guys.
Yeah. Look at you, big spender.
Well, no, they're the big donor guys. I'm the small donor guy. Like, I buy tickets to the game. So essentially, they're talking about attendance. Like, attendance is down, buddy. And he's like, well, attendance is down all around college basketball. Like, well, no, actually, it's higher. It was kind of up a little bit. Well, attendance is down when you're losing. I mean, here's the thing. Having lived on campus, you know, a long, long time ago, there wasn't really the greatest effort at getting people out to games, especially even if it's free and whatever. And a lot of people kind of just like, well, they'll come or they come. And, you know, people just don't like basketball around here and, you know, whatever. But here's the thing is that it really is winning, right? It's winning plus, right? You win, people go to the games and they're going to have a good time. And people like to see winning teams, right? SMU, nobody went to an SMU game until they started winning. And then they couldn't keep them out. A lot of it is winning.
Like, you know, when we were winning in 2013, and then we had the bowl win, and we didn't take advantage of that from a marketing standpoint, from, you know, a ticket office standpoint, you know, so we've seen the Mean Green Club numbers, they've gone down.
Yeah.
Ticket sales, they've gone down. The marketing strategy, it sucks. The website itself, the run, you know, they took Beyond the Green away from the people. That was a really good show. They took that away. Everything that they're doing is just trending down. You're just hammering down on us people. The people that were left in those pictures, you know, the people that are going to show up on Saturday, those are the minute few that are voicing their opinion that want to see something different because they truly care. The people that, you know, paid for the banner, they care. They want to see, you know, a good product on the field. And it's not just about, you know, the coaching hires that he's made. It's about everything else. It's about what he's, you know, the way he speaks to us. You know, it feels like, you know, some people say like he's giving us the middle finger or something. He probably doesn't believe that necessarily. I don't think he does. But it's just, I think he truly believes what he says. And I'm like, I don't know how. Why?
I just got to probably talk about minute few. Yeah, so the point I was trying to make is that it's basically like it is mostly winning. Yes, like that is not that's not a lie, but it's that plus that, you know, it's there's people there that wouldn't go to the games if it also weren't fun or advertised or they knew about it. Like it's like an entertainment thing. It really is just entertainment, and there's a lot of people that will go. Because, you know, they support the team, right? I go, you know, I'm going to fly out to Tennessee to go watch them play at Tennessee, you know, And a few of my friends are going with me. They're like, why? They like my mother-in-law is like, every time y'all go, they lose. Like, don't they always lose? And why do you even support that team anymore?
You're just going because you want to go to the University of Tennessee Stadium.
Yeah, I want to go see the Neyland Stadium. But I'm also a crazy person. I've already been up to, you know, see a couple games this season where they haven't won a game. You know, I was already making plans for next season. Like, all right, going to go the opener. Then I'm going to go the Florida game. And then I'm going to go this. I mean, the thing is, there's a baseline number of people, the minute few, right, that he's talking about so dismissively, that actually care. And it's going to be really hard to shake them no matter what, as you can see. 0-7, worst loss in FBS history. And here we are blogging about them, podcasting about them. It seems like maybe we care a little bit.
We do. Yeah. I was one of the few people that's in that picture somewhere that stayed to the end of the Western Kentucky game because I wanted to watch them score touchdowns because I care. I sent an email to the president because I care. And I'm like, here's what you need to do. You need to get rid of your athletic director because it's just not working out. And then, you know, he's got to respond basically the same way he talks to the reporters, you know, 1,100 words defending himself. You know, that just you're not, you just, for what he needs to do is just shut up. He just needs to close his mouth, stop talking. All right. Yeah. If you're going to keep the job, just stop talking. Stop defending yourself. Yeah. And he needs to go out, you know, lock himself in a room and with whoever he trusts to help pick this coach. And he's got to nail it. He has just got to nail it. And even then, people are going to say he needs to be gone and whatnot. But for his legacy, this hire, this is the most important thing. He's got to nail this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if, you know, and this is, again, this is really me speaking, like, totally, I have no idea, like, the day-to-day responsibilities of an athletic director outside of the kind of public one, create a schedule, this, that, and the other. Okay, he's got a couple guys donate $1 million here and there. I feel like that's part of the job. But I feel like he spends a lot of time worrying about these guys donating $1 million, $2 million at the expense of the, you know, the potential millions that he could get through regular attendance, through, you know, endorsement deals and this kind. I mean, you can have 17, 18 people that donate a lot of money. It's going to keep us at that level. But that number is never going to grow unless he engages everybody else, that the middle class of the alumni base, you know, that – then you got to put a winning product on the field, and then two, you have to, you know, you really, there's a lot of stories about people like not really getting the service they expect, this, that, and the other, and it's kind of hard to parse all of that. Like, how much of that it is people just, you know, wanting to be, you know, waited on hand and foot, and other people are actually getting, you know, poor experiences as a UNT customer. I don't know,
right? But he has this group that, you know, that funds the program, that keeps everything going. You know, the big money donors, they're there, right? And then we start to win in 2013. Bam. That's the time that he should have jumped all over the middle people. Mm-hmm. That's the time that he should have really reached out to the DFW Metroplex and nailed in everybody else. Look at what we're doing. We're changing the culture. We're winning games. We're going to go to a bowl game. And that was the crucial point, and he didn't do that. The athletic department didn't do that. And now we're stuck because he's got to rely on those other big guys and he's got to keep those guys happy. So he can't go out and talk to the other people because he might piss off his, you know, his guys. And then those guys, well, the big money donors, they support RP because he's the puppet and he's going to do whatever the hell, you know, they tell him to do. You're firing Dan tonight because I'm paying the buyout. Okay, I'll do that tonight. And then he's going to make Dan look like an ass. And he makes himself look like an ass. Look, he just shut up. Stop talking to the media. Stop taking interviews. Just stop talking, period. And do your job. You know, just find a way to pick the right coach. That's all you've got to worry about right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, like you said, the time to jump out there and engage the fan base is past, and now, you know, like I said, he's relying on, like, the one thing that he can do is, like, it's winning again. Like I said, that is an important part, but it's not all of the part of building an athletic program, getting people out there. You can win and say, well, we're going to be winning, and they'll come, right? If you win, they'll come. That is the most important, but it's not the most not everything that you can do. And I feel like sometimes that Dan McCarney did a better job of selling the program than maybe Rick Vieriel did. And, like, if we could have got – maybe he would take Dan McCartney back as, like, an AD because he would go out there. He would go shake the hands. It was his idea to have the freshman class, right, the freshman new – I'm going to call them new joiners. The what is it called? The freshman orientation, have them come through to the stadium, and he gives them a little speech.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons that we have so many people, like all the students going there. And that's, again, reaching out to the middle class. That's reaching out to – those like the lowest classes of students, right? They ain't got no money, right? They're not going to donate $1 million anytime soon. But the thing is that you build that lifelong fandom, right? The people come to the stadium, you know, and then you can get the big money people in there. And it's, look, you can donate, you can sell your product to all these people, whatever. Whatever your reasons for donating, right? But that's where you do it. It's the little things like that. It's reaching out and seeing if we can have better coverage in, you know, local, in Denton, in Louisville, in the surrounding areas of Denton. I mean, sure, we're not going to knock off the Cowboys in coverage. I mean, the Cowboys are number one coverage all the way down here. Yeah, so, yeah, we're not going to knock off the Cowboys in coverage, right? But we can go out there and do more than we're doing. We can't just sit back and say, well, when we win, you know, then they'll pay attention to us. Like, let's get what attention we can get right now. Let's get what support we can get right now. So that way when we win, like, it'll really fill in, right? We don't just go and say, now we have 25,000 people here. Then it'll be the 30,000 that we'll get, right? I mean, that's just my two cents. And I think you just kind of have to look back to when Johnny Jones was here and we were actually filling up the Super Pit. A lot of that was because we were winning. But there was not a whole lot else going on. There was not a whole lot else of support of Rick Vrial making the rounds and saying, hey, look at our college basketball team. They're really good. A lot of it was an attitude of like, hey, well, they should be coming to us. And that's not really the attitude that we need to have.
Right.
So I like what Smastrix is doing because he goes out there, he shakes the hands, right? You know, I liked what McCartney did, and I don't feel like Rick Vrial maybe does that enough. And, you know, maybe that's a stupid criticism to have. Like, you really don't know what athletic directors do you? It's not about shaking hands. But I think it's partly about shaking hands. And I feel like my hand needs to be shaken. Needs to be shook more.
Well, the next time I see you, I'll shake your hand.
I don't want your handshake. I want to hire up. I need to get Danny Culk over here to shake my hand. Yeah, he lives in San Antonio. I know the guy. Maybe we'll have Danny Culk on the show. I know somebody said I need to get Sid Will on here. Man, I need to do that too. Anyway, this one was a longish episode of the Mangry Nation podcast. Thanks for listening, people live. I know some people were listening live. Probably had to go to sleep because it's already 10. But if you listen to it later on today, don't forget to give us feedback. Podcast at MangryNation.com. Subscribe to the newsletter. Subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter. I'm MangryNation. Greg is MGN_breakdown. Lots of ways to get in touch with the show, with the blog, with lots of things. You should do it. I don't know how reliable we are, but we're there. Either.
Apparently, we're not that reliable. Yeah. At least my internet is not reliable for some reason tonight.
Yeah, you're just dipping out here and there. Thanks again for listening, and that's it. Goodbye. Go Mean Green. BETSA.